We now join in progress the candidates forum sponsored by Christian Coalition.
That breaks down each of the races, whether it be the primary in the Democratic gubernatorial race or the gubernatorial race on the Republican side, you're able to download that, where candidates have responded in a given race. Now, if there was no candidate that responded on either Democrat or Republican in a contested primary race, that is not included. And again, in November, we will have our full voter guide as well. So it's very much of a helpful educational piece. And in 2004, we distributed over 2.5 million voter guides statewide. We are pleased that the Citizen USA newspaper has provided this publication, and they printed 500,000 on Monday and Tuesday of this week that will have statewide distribution. So please help us with that tonight. And also, there's a gentleman back at the table that if you're come from one of the other counties and you would like to take a number of the papers with you to distribute there, they're taking orders tonight, and also where they can drop ship them to you if you have a network of people that can volunteer and distribute the papers. So that's very much in need. Indeed, that is the strength of groups like the Christian Coalition of Ohio, is the volunteer effort that folks give in distributing educational materials. And it's so imperative that we do that to become involved in the public process. See, we just can't complain after someone is elected to office and not participate in the process. Well, in just a few minutes, we're going to be live on the air on WRFD. And with that, we're going to have our candidates forum tonight. Our moderator for the evening is Bob Burney, who is the Drive Time talk show host of Bob Burney Live. And I'm so glad that Bob has agreed to be our moderator this evening. And we're going to be discussing a number of issues tonight. And we've asked David R. Smith, who's running for Senate, to join us on our panel tonight because of one of the other candidates that could not participate. So if the candidates would make their way to the platform, and I'm going to turn the evening over to Bob. Bob, if you'll come forward, and then we'll begin our candidates forum. Again, I want to thank all of those of you that came tonight. Do stop by the table and pick up the Citizen USA newspaper with the educational voter guide in it, and, of course, encouraging everyone that you know to get out and vote on May 2nd. Bob.
Thank you, Chris, and well, I love that rumble, but I don't have that deep a voice. Thank you again for joining us tonight, and welcome to our candidates, and let me take care of the legalities for the FCC and say that you are listening to the Christian Coalition of Ohio's Candidate Forum from Jersey Baptist Church in Columbus. I'm Bob Burney, and we're pleased to be broadcasting live on WFCO Lancaster. Oh, I said that wrong. It's Lancaster. I've been in Ohio for 30 years, and I still can't say it right. Lancaster, 90.9 FM, News Talk 1420, WHK in Cleveland, and the Word 880, WRFD, Columbus, Worthington. The beauties of live radio, you go on the air whether all of the candidates are here or not, and as Chris said, evidently there are some very serious traffic problems, and we know that some of the candidates are on their way. Others just may not show, and if so, we will certainly acknowledge that. On the platform currently is Tim Grindel, running for Attorney General. He is currently serving as an Ohio State Senator, and he is a Republican. Joining him is David Smith, Republican, running for U.S. Senate. And we will introduce the other candidates as they arrive. Here are the rules, gentlemen. We are going to watch your time very, very carefully. You have 4 minutes to give an opening statement as to who you are, why you are running for office, and basically what makes you tick politically. And then after the introduction, I'll be answering or asking you questions, and your answer will be 3 minutes. Seated on the front row are two gentlemen with some nice signs. They say 1 minute, 30 seconds, and you're done, you're out of here. Now, it says time up, but we will enforce that rigidly so that we can move through the evening, and they should be easy for you to see. Mr. Grindel, we will begin with you, your opening statement, please.
Thank you, Bob, and good evening. Thank you to the Christian Coalition of Ohio and the Jersey Baptist Church for the opportunity for speaking this evening and for all of you for being here. I'm Tim Grindel. I'm the state senator from the 18th Senate District, which is the maple syrup and snow country east of Cleveland. I am the true conservative Republican candidate for Ohio Attorney General. While my opponent claims to share our values and be a conservative leader, I am the pro-life Republican candidate for Attorney General. My opponent is pro-abortion, or as the Column Post magazine newspaper said, Montgomery is an abortion rights advocate. I am endorsed by Ohio Right to Life, Family First, Cincinnati Right to Life. I am the pro-Second Amendment candidate. I am endorsed by the NRA and every pro-Second Amendment organization in Ohio. I am the only military veteran running statewide for the Republican Party. I served 4.5 years active duty in the United States Army. I was a prosecutor with the 2nd Armored Division, where I prosecuted 67 criminal cases. I was selected from 1,800 military lawyers to teach at the U.S. Army Judge Advocate General School. I have a Master's of Law from the University of Virginia. I spent 23 years in private practice as a constitutional lawyer, land use lawyer, municipal lawyer, mostly representing folks on land use cases. 5 years ago, I defended my home township, Chester Township, when the ACLU showed up and told my township trustees they had to take a church from the township's seal. Our county prosecutor said they had to remove that church. I stepped up and represented the township for free, and I'm proud to tell you today that church is still on the Chester Township seal. I spent the last 5 years. Thank you. I spent the last 5 years in the state legislature. Like Ken Blackwell, I fought the 1 cent sales tax. I am the state legislator who led the fight to defeat the $5 proposed parking fee at our state parks. I introduced the legislation to decrease the size of state government from 23 agencies to 9 to save over $1.2 billion a year. I sat on the Criminal Justice Committee. I sit on the Ohio Criminal Sentencing Commission. Last year, when the U.S. Supreme Court came up with the bad idea that government could take a perfectly good property from a private citizen and give it to a private developer, I introduced Senate Bill 167, which put a stop on those tactics here in Ohio, and I'm co-chairman of the committee that is rewriting Ohio's eminent domain law to better protect private property rights. I'm running for Ohio Attorney General, and I have been since last May. My opponent dropped into the race in January when she found herself, because of her liberal views, running last for governor. I'm running because I think the Attorney General's job can be a stepping stone to taking Ohio back to greatness and shouldn't be a stepping stone for someone's political career. I'm running because my 5 years in the legislature, I have established that I am not a conservative who just talks conservative family values. I am a traditional Republican who has spent 5 years sometimes fighting my own party to continue to press for the traditional family values that make this state and the Republican Party in this state the leadership that it is. I have a reputation of being a tenacious advocate. I hate to lose. And I will take that tenacious advocacy skills to the Attorney General's office to fight for you. I will fight for life. I will fight to defend marriage. I will fight to defend private property rights and Second Amendment rights. And I will fight to protect traditional family values here in Ohio. I ask that you not be fooled by slick commercials, but look at the record. And I am the true conservative Republican running for Ohio Attorney General this year. I'd appreciate your support. Thank you, Bob.
I want to make something absolutely clear. All of the candidates for governor and attorney general were invited to the forum this evening. They were all invited a long time ago, and the candidates that you see who are not here this evening have declined to participate in this forum. But we wanted you to know that all of them were duly invited to be here tonight. Next, David Smith, not on your program, an addition because of a candidate who could not be here. David Smith is running for United States Senate as a Republican.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank the candidate that wasn't able to be here tonight. And it's very nice to have the opportunity to be here with you folks. I'd like to begin, I guess, by doing something a little unorthodox, but it's important to me. The most important thing to me in my life happens to be here with me tonight, and I'm going to have them stand. This is my lovely wife, Janelle, and my three sons, Joshua, Tate, and Porter. They are the most important thing to me, and part of the reason why I'm running for United States Senate. About 5 years ago, I was in job transition. I'm a finance professional, MBA from Northwestern up in Chicago. And I was reading a book, President Bush's book, A Charge to Keep, and I was contemplating my life and what purpose I felt the Lord had for me. And as I read that book, something lit up inside of me, and I turned to my wife and I said, "Honey, somewhere, somehow, I'm supposed to be involved in protecting the freedom and rights of the citizens of the United States of America." And she looked at me and she felt that same burning in her heart, and she said, "David, that's what you're supposed to do. I support you. Let's get busy." So 5 years ago, we got busy studying the issues, working towards preparing myself for this day and this time that I may run for United States Senate. You know, I believe today that the most important thing to the stability and strength and future of our country is the strength of the individual families in America. And now, more than ever, there are enemies at all sides coming at us trying to break down and destroy the family. And I think it's time. It's time that we have leaders that represent us back in Washington, D.C., that stand up and fight for what is right and what is good. And I believe that there are two critical pillars that ensure that families are strong, healthy, and happy in America. One is the financial condition of our country. What makes us happy and be able to raise successful, good families is when a father and or a mother can have a strong, good job, raise a decent living for their family, and provide for them, that they can attend church, be involved in the community, other activities. That's what life is all about here in America. And I believe the government has failed to protect the families, whether it's individual tax burdens, corporate tax burdens, unbearable regulations on American businesses. This weight and burden that government has placed upon American families and businesses makes it impossible for families to be strong and to provide strong livings for themselves. The second issue that I believe that is critical is the moral foundation of our country. You know, Samuel Adams said that our Constitution was holy for a religious and a moral people, and is wholly inadequate for the government of any other. With that, that means that our Constitution can only bring freedom and prosperity to a people who's trying to do what's right, trying to be good. And I believe that all around us, things are aimed at destroying those purposes, whether it's the sanctity of marriage, abortion, or allowing homosexual couples to adopt children. To me, that is totally unacceptable. It is time for leaders to stand up and oppose those things and protect the American family. If I'm elected to be your senator, I will protect the families of America and ensure that we have a strong moral and financial economy. Thank you.
Thank you. Is this Mr. Flannery? Mr. Flannery, welcome. You are just in time to give a 4-minute opening statement. Thank you for being here tonight. We appreciate it very much. Brian Flannery is running for the office of governor, state of Ohio. Democrat, he currently serves as an administrative consultant. Mr. Flannery, the candidates are giving 4-minute opening statements. The two gentlemen here have weapons with them. They are timekeepers, and they have signs that will warn you when you have 1 minute left, 30 seconds left, and then when the gun is pulled. So, Mr. Flannery, welcome. We'd like your four-minute opening statement, please.
Timing is perfect, and thank you to the Christian Coalition for inviting me to this forum and to give an opportunity to make my case for why people should consider voting for me for governor of Ohio. The reason I'm running for governor is to protect the Democratic Party from itself. And what I mean by that is over the recent history, the past two decades, the Democratic Party has had a terrible record of failure, a record of failure that has lost to losing elections, but more importantly, they have lost basically their way. And I come from a family of a history of people who have given public service. My great-grandfather, who came to Ohio for a better life, escaping the coal mines in Pennsylvania, he helped build a church. His name's on the St. Coleman Parish cornerstone. He helped build that, and he got involved in politics. And he worked that ward for 50 years with his wife. And his son, my grandfather, Joe Flannery, was elected Cleveland City Councilman in the 1950s. And he served and made his impact and then went back to the private sector. And his son, my father, Jim Flannery, continued that tradition in the late 60s and served in the state legislature for three terms. And I've continued that tradition. I'm a graduate of the University of Notre Dame, played football on their last national championship team in 1988. And I am a member of St. John Newman Catholic Church in Strongsville, Ohio. I'm a commissioned Eucharistic minister. And I'm running for governor to get back the Democratic Party back to what used to make the Democratic Party good, and it was its ideas. Its ideas for addressing some of the most pressing issues of our time. And the pressing issues of today is record foreclosures, record bankruptcies, a state government that's spending is out of control with no focus or no compass, it seems. And we're awash in a lot of scandals in Columbus, and I really believe the reason for that is because there is no focus, there is no compass on the direction we want to go. The basis of my candidacy is to fix an unconstitutional school funding system, which has divided communities, has divided churches all across Ohio. And it's a formula that has led to division, has led to problems, has led to hateful feelings towards your neighbor, and it doesn't happen anywhere else in the country. When we all heard about the levee breaking from Katrina, what happened? Our country rushed to rescue that situation, but here in Ohio, we have another type of levee problem, and it's the school levee. This May, there will be 200 school issues on the ballot, and I'm here to tell you there is absolutely no reason or no need for that to occur. The reason is the state of Ohio in its constitution has said that it's the state's responsibility to provide a thorough and efficient system of education. And as governor, what I will do as governor is make sure that occurs and do that by defining what it costs to provide an education based on the standards and the mandates that the state of Ohio has. And along with that, once we cost it out and pay for it, I'm going to also provide at least $1 billion of property tax relief across the board. That'll help Ohio and families facing their bankruptcies. It'll help with the foreclosure issue. And it'll help boost and spur Ohio's economy. I have a lot of other ideas, but that's one of the main reasons. And finally, with my time winding up, I'm just proud to say that I'm a happy husband. With two beautiful children, a daughter who's five and a boy that's two. And I'm fighting for them, but more importantly, I'm fighting for Ohio's families. Thank you.
Thank you. Since Mr. Grindel was the first to arrive tonight, we'll give him the privilege of answering the first question. This question is aimed particularly at the Office of Attorney General. I'll give the other two candidates who are here presently the option of whether they want to answer it or not, because it is primarily towards the Office of Attorney General. Mr. Grindel, the Supreme Court recently made one of their most controversial rulings in Kelo versus City of New London. And you'll probably remember that in a 5-4 decision, the court ruled that eminent domain can now be exercised in America for nothing more than the economic benefit of a community. In my radio program this afternoon, we had several callers call and express deep concern about the overreaching power of not just state government, but local and municipal government. As Attorney General, what would your position be on defending Ohio's property owners from greedy government?
Well, as I mentioned in my opening comments, I was appalled by the Kelo decision. The majority of the U.S. Supreme Court misinterpreted the concept of public use as it flows from the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution. Historically, public use has meant schools, roads, and fire stations and sewers. The Supreme Court decision to expand that to take private property for economic development was a misapplication of the law. That is why I sponsored Senate Bill 167 that has put a moratorium on Kelo takings in Ohio. Kelo cannot occur in Ohio right now because of Senate Bill 167, and as co-chairman of the Eminent Domain Task Force, we are working to rewrite Ohio law by the end of the year to prohibit those type of economic development takings in Ohio. As Attorney General, I look forward to enforcing the new changes in Ohio law that I anticipate will come from the task force, and we will make sure that under Article 1, Section 19 of the Ohio Constitution, where it says that private property rights are inviolate, I will enforce that concept, that private property rights are inviolate in Ohio, and protect the private property rights of Ohio citizens.
It would be wonderful if Betty Montgomery, his opponent, could answer that question, but she declined to be with us tonight. The other two candidates, would you choose to answer this question?
Absolutely. In fact, this issue is near and dear to me. The city I represented and grew up in, the city of Lakewood, Ohio, faced a huge eminent domain issue, which gained national attention, where the city wanted to go and take homes. And they used the definition of blight, which would have disqualified about 95% of the homes in that city. This is very problematic, and when government steps in to try to use force to take perfectly good neighborhoods with, you know, in the spirit of business, I totally oppose and am against. Fortunately, the citizens rose, they fought that and defeated that at the ballot, and eminent domain went away. But it was a hard fight. And as governor of Ohio, what I would look to do is to look at taking that definition of blight and making a case for creating classifications for that. I'm totally against private interests coming in and taking private property for the purpose of development or business or whatever case they want to make. So it's something I strongly oppose and will as governor of Ohio.
I feel that this use of eminent domain goes completely against what our Constitution means. And if individuals want property and want to take private citizens' property, they just need to make them an offer they can't refuse. And that is the only way I would support them getting that property. They have no right under any circumstances to take an individual's property for private use, period.
You probably noticed that another candidate has arrived, J. Kenneth Blackwell, currently serving as Ohio's Secretary of State. He is running for the office of governor on the Republican ticket. Mr. Blackwell, the rules of the game are we're asking questions. You have 3 minutes to answer. Our timekeepers are here on the front row. They have signs with 1 minute, 30 seconds, and you're finished, done, over. And we don't care if you're a politician, you're over, you're done. Would you, we just asked a question about eminent domain, particularly to the Attorney General's office, and I've given the other candidates the option of answering if you would like to give an answer. And specifically in the Supreme Court decision of Kelo versus New London.
Let me preface this by saying that there are two points within the Constitution and within our Bill of Rights that I think underscore the signature definition of the character of our economy and of our constitutional government. The first is the First Amendment that says Congress shall make no law that prohibits the exercise of religion. I believe that religion, a religious expression, is the purest form of human conscience, and therefore individuality is enshrined in the individual conscience. The second is property. I think that gives us independence from the state. So I would actually work day and night to protect our First Amendment right to worship in the public square and to own our public and own our property and to understand the balance between individual liberty and the growth of the state. I think it's out of balance. Tim and I have been working. I think the Department of Natural Resources right now in the state of Ohio is engaged in the largest tax grab in the state's history, and I'm on the front line working against that sort of grab of property and in protection of property rights.
Thank you. The next question deals with a federal issue, but we all know that Ohio has become almost the center of the political universe, particularly in the last election, and we know that our state government impacts federal issues because of America looking to Ohio. So I'd like to ask our candidates for governor first and then for Senate, and Mr. Grindel, if you would like to answer this, you certainly may. What is your position on the ratification of a federal marriage amendment defining marriage as a union between one man and one woman that does not allow for civil unions? Mr. Flannery, would you begin with your response, please?
My position on that is consistent with the position on the amendment that was on the ballot last year. I support the notion of marriages between one man and one woman, and unlike my opponent, who feels the opposite. So I would be in support of that type of resolution or law passed at the federal level, mirroring what the state of Ohio has already done.
That would include a federal amendment?
Yes.
And that would include that marriage does not allow for civil unions?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Blackwell.
I've been in full collaboration with the Family Research Council and the Arlington Group, a coalition of faith-based and family organizations in structuring the language for the federal amendment. I was in the forefront and the leading spokesperson for Issue 1, the Marriage Protection Amendment, in 2004, and I fully support the federal amendment and amendments whose language I helped to craft. The other point that I want to make is that why it's so important is because within the U.S. Constitution, there's the Full Faith and Credit Clause, which basically says that one state has to recognize the driver's license or the driver's the license plates of another state to protect ourselves against the Full Faith and Credit Clause. I think it's important to change the U.S. Constitution to protect marriage as defined as a union between one man and one woman. And if you want the benefits of marriage, then get married.
Mr. Smith, as a candidate for the U.S. Senate, obviously this applies probably more to you than anyone else on the panel.
I mentioned a little bit earlier, I believe families are the foundation of our country, and anything that aims at destroying the family, I believe, is undermining the future of our country. I fully support a federal amendment recognizing marriage as a union between one man and one woman. And I believe that it's essential that we stop what is happening in certain states where that is allowed, because as Mr. Blackwell mentioned, that will infiltrate the other states. We must stand up and stop it at a federal level and ensure that we protect the family and protect the sanctity of marriage, and I will support that.
And specifically, would you include a prohibition of civil unions in that amendment?
Yes, I would.
And Mr. Blackwell, did you address that specifically? Yes, okay. Mr. Grindel.
Well, I fully support the federal marriage amendment defining marriage as a union between one man and a woman, and that would not allow for civil unions. This is not a come-late position for me. I was co-sponsor of the Ohio Defense of Marriage Act when I served in the legislature. It was a privilege to work with Secretary of State Blackwell to push for passage of the Ohio Marriage Protection Act, and I agree with Secretary of State Blackwell that the federal amendment will help cover the problem of the Full Faith and Credit Act and the Constitution. And my wife is a Court of Appeals judge. She's actually had to deal with that issue of full faith and credit, where someone who had changed their sex tried to use a Massachusetts birth certificate. And in Massachusetts, if you change your sex, you can change your birth certificate. Thank goodness you can't do that in Ohio. But they tried to claim full faith and credit. She ruled against that. And I practice what I preach. I'm married to a lovely wife and have two children, and I believe that's the way God meant it to be.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have just witnessed a modern-day miracle. Not only have we seen Republicans and Democrats agree on anything, we've had four politicians, and none of them took their required time for that question. I can't believe it. They love brevity. You can see that. A follow-up question to that, and you can probably answer this even more briefly. Should marital benefits be extended to domestic partners, including state of Ohio employees? And let's begin, let's go backwards, Mr. Blackwell, and go right down the line.
Well, that's why I said that we crafted the language in issue one to be very, very specific and non-discriminatory. It basically says that if you want to be married, and marriage is defined as a union between a man and a woman, and you want the benefits of marriage, then you have to be married. Now, since Tim took the liberty of his space and his time, I've been married to my childhood sweetheart for 38 years, and we've had a wonderful marriage, and we've raised three children. And I believe that more and more families in this country need to understand that if we want to give our children a real chance of success and we want to be at the center of their character development, then we need to work hard as a nation community to make sure that they are brought up in strong families and in marriages that are between a man and a woman.
Mr. Grindel.
The answer is no, we should not give marital benefits extended to domestic partners, including and especially by the state of Ohio, because that goes contrary to the whole concept of why we passed the Marriage Protection Act, the Defense of Marriage Act. You can't recognize it as an institution between a man and woman and then erode it by giving other benefits to folks who don't follow that concept of marriage.
And the reason I asked that question tonight is that when issue one was such a controversial issue, we were told by many that if issue one passed and civil unions, domestic partner benefits were not offered to Ohio State employees, that Ohio was going to go to hell in a handbag economically. And I wanted your position on that. Yes, Mr. Flannery.
Yes, and you know, it's easy to state your opinions in friendly environment, but let me give you an example of a situation that I was involved in early in my political career. I represented the city of Lakewood, one of the most progressive cities in the state of Ohio, and the issue was brought before city council on extending domestic partners the benefits of health care within the city. I was the only member on council that voted not even to accept the legislation into committee and made a case for even holding hearings, and that issue did die. And the reason is this. One, it's a personal belief, as these gentlemen have pointed out, of the values that is created, but they made the argument that, you know, we need to provide health care for everyone, and that's was at a time when we were talking about federally mandated health care, and something I definitely oppose. But I work in the health care field now and have for the past 4 years and have been involved in insurance for the past 15 years. And I think the answer to allowing benefits to anyone in Ohio is to address the overruns and the cost of fraud and waste in the healthcare system and the prescription drug system by use of technology that's available to companies here in Ohio and should be utilized by the state of Ohio. We can make healthcare affordable for everyone who chooses to use it, but we should not use the issue of domestic partners to make that case for making healthcare benefits available to everyone. there's a lot of issues that come up when you try to legally say, well, who's a, you know, a domestic partner, and how do you verify that, or, you know, who's cheating the system or not. So get to the heart of the matter. If it is about health care, let's address the issue of health care here in Ohio. It's not the, you know, we can't use these other social type issues as a wedge to create unnecessary costs to the state and to local governments.
I'm not trying to be facetious. I'm really not. Was that a yes or a no? On the question, should marital benefits be extended to domestic partners, including state of Ohio employees? Thank you. All right. Mr. Smith.
Yeah, I believe that there is a very crafty position taken by those that share opposite views that I do, and most of us in this room do, and that is an effort to try to get government to recognize things that are wrong. And once government recognizes things that are wrong, then it makes it easier for people to practice those wrong things. If individuals want to share in the benefits of marriage and health benefits and other benefits, then they need to be married. Individuals that desire those things without getting married, to me, is wrong. It's both wrong morally and it's wrong economically, and I don't support it.
Specific question to Mr. Grindel, and again, I will give the other candidates the option of answering if they choose. Mr. Grindel, recently the Ohio legislature approved the issuance of specially licensed plates, including Choose Life and One Nation Under God. It is almost certain that the ACLU will mount a continuing challenge. As Attorney General, would you defend this legislation that allows Ohio drivers to demonstrate their support for life and our national motto?
Well, as Ohio's next Attorney General, I look forward to defending the legislation I co-sponsored. I co-sponsored the Choose Life plate. I co-sponsored the One Nation Under God plate. I've researched this issue thoroughly, and we can not only defend, but we will be victorious in defending those plates and the rights of Ohioans to have those plates on their vehicle. And in fact, I also introduced the legislation to amicus brief in the Supreme Court when the gentleman in California was challenging the One Nation Under God as being included in our Pledge of Allegiance. It is a critical part. As George Washington said, religion and morality are essential to good government, and they don't have to be separated in the public forum. We need to quit misinterpreting what the Constitution says on that issue. And I will personally be in the courtroom, and this is my pledge. I'm a 23-year courtroom lawyer. I will be personally in the courtroom to defend both Choose Life and One Nation Under God should they be brought into the federal courts.
It is imperative to me, and I think the Christian Coalition as well, that this candidate's forum be objective, open, and honest, and fair. And because of that, I want to make a statement. Mr. Grindel, I may be the dumbest person in Ohio, but I was not aware that you crafted that legislation, or I would not have served you a softball right down the middle of the plate. I was unaware of that.
Sponsor of that legislation.
All right. All right. I didn't want it to look like we had collaborated on that. To the other candidates, rather than dealing with that issue specifically as Attorney General, let's deal with something that is very similar. Would you give us briefly your definition of the separation of church and state as our founding fathers originally designed it to be? One of the most controversial issues that we're dealing with today, Thomas Jefferson is constantly quoted in one letter to the Danbury Baptists, and it seems like every politician has a different definition of what separation of church and state really means. Let's begin with Mr. Smith and come this way down the panel.
I believe that there is no separation between church and state. The Constitution makes it very clear in the First Amendment that the federal government shall pass no law restricting the free exercise of religion. It does not give exceptions to public buildings and other edifices of that nature, or in public schools or that matter. I am very opposed to the drive by the ACLU and other individuals in this country that feel that somehow they need to take God out of the foundation of this country. That is not right. It goes against our constitutional amendment. And when I'm being told that I can't mention the name of Jesus Christ or God in public settings, that is clearly, for me, a violation of my First Amendment. And I'd just like to add that, you know, as Christians, we turn the other cheek. That's what we're taught. We're taught that that's the right thing and that's the good thing, and we live our lives like that. And I believe the opposite end of the spectrum, the individuals that we challenge so often, they're not taught those principles. And they will come at us very viciously and violently and aggressively. And I believe that in these cases, it's time to take a stand. It's time to pull out the sword and say, enough's enough. We are going to protect our rights and what are guaranteed by us. And you're not going to march in and take it away from us. We will be kind and generous and friendly. But when you start to violate our freedoms, we are going to fight for them. And as your senator, I will fight for them.
Mr. Flannery.
With regards to the separation of church and state issue, I believe the intent of the framers was that federal government shouldn't mandate a specific religion. And that I support. I do not support the restriction of freedom of religion. I think that it's good to have differing views, because those that challenge us and make us question our faith only makes our faith stronger when we really think about it. We need to respect and honor all forms of religion and the ability to freely practice that and make that ability available. And getting back to the previous question on the Choose Life plates, I also was a co-sponsor on that and was a sponsor of keeping the Ten Commandments in the public facilities. And Jamie Callender simultaneously introduced that legislation, and I deferred to him because he was in the majority party and was the second sponsor of that piece when that was introduced in the House of Representatives.
All right, we're going to skip Mr. Grindel because you answered the last question. Mr. Blackwell, please.
The flip side of a theocracy is not the secular state. The flip side of a theocracy is religious freedom. And I've been a standard bearer and a defender of religious liberty in every facet of my life. I think when you understand the history of this country, the founders were actually fleeing a situation where the state and the church were almost synonymous. And so what they wanted to do is basically take a stand for religious liberty. And as I said earlier, faith expression is the purest expression of the human conscience. And it is one of the signature defining aspects of our human liberty in this country. And so while there is a separation of church and state as it relates to the establishment of a church state or a state church, there is no prohibition against the free expression of faith in the public square. Let me be clear. Martin Luther King in 1963 said that the faith community in general and the church, the Christian church in particular, had a choice to make, whether we would be a thermometer that just took the temperature of the culture in which we lived, or whether or not we would be a thermostat to help to define and drive the mores of the culture in which we live. I'm a thermostat.
Directed to the two gubernatorial candidates here, and again, the other candidates may choose to answer if they desire. The subject of taxes and taxation has always been near and dear to the hearts of Americans. I think I remember reading about a Tea Party somewhere that was prompted by taxes. Would you please briefly describe your position on requiring voter approval for state tax increases? Mr. Blackwell, we'll begin with you and move the other direction this time.
I have authored a constitutional amendment which will be on the ballot this November that would require not only a voter approval of new taxes, but would require voter approval to break a cap when established that would say that runaway state government spending could not exceed inflation plus population growth, whichever, or 3.5%, whichever is greater. Let me be clear to you about this. Right now, in our Constitution, we prohibit deficit spending, so our spending rate has to influence our tax policy and our tax rates. Right now, Ohio is number 3 in total state and local tax burden, and the only way that you're going to reform our tax code is by building in the fiscal space to do that, and the only way that we can do that is stop the runaway government spending that exists in this state. Over the last decade, we have led the nation in increases in state government spending. And so putting up the fiscal guardrails will allow us to do some meaningful things. Move to a single rate income tax system of 3.25% over the next 4 years. Cut our capital gains tax by 60+% and do away with the standalone state estate tax. Put up a sign that Ohio is back open for business and job creation. We're number 47th in the nation in terms of job creation, and we're number 50 in the nation in terms of new small business startups. Yes, I want to make sure that we empower voters to check runaway government spending and to have voter and taxpayer approval to jack up the tax rates that have made us woefully uncompetitive and led to the headlines in the Columbus Dispatch today, which say that people are leaving Ohio in droves, and that's because they're doing what Americans have done for 229 years. That is, they will cut their own taxes, protect their financial interests by moving if they're able. We have to stop the exodus of capital and people by changing our tax code, and I want to give voters a right to help us shape that policy.
I'd like to allow Mr. Flannery to respond since you're the other governor's candidate, please.
Yeah, the question revolving around requiring voter approval for tax increases, I generally support in principle. The policy that's being proposed by my potential opponent in the general election, I do not support. The Tell Amendment that's been called, for me, stands for truly escaping leadership. And I say that in the context of if you're a candidate, you want to lead this state, you need to have the ability and the wherewithal to make those tough decisions to control the spending that is going crazy. I'm the only candidate in the governor field that is actually talking about giving back property taxes, which is one of the most regressive taxes in Ohio, one of the most hated taxes in Ohio, and a tax that discriminates against everyone. There's a reason why we lead the country in foreclosures and bankruptcies, and there's a reason why that trend will continue, because the legislature has made decisions to allow our property taxes to grow more with inflation, and the legislature has made decisions that will force school districts in Ohio to raise your property taxes to the tune of over $2 billion. So if no matter what you do, if you have an amendment that controls spending at the state level, what happens is that pushes it down to the local level, and they're going to raise your taxes. It gets down to leadership and making these tough decisions and controlling spending. No country, no governmental entity has survived by taxing and borrowing their way to prosperity. And that's exactly what's happening here in the state of Ohio, and it must stop. It has to stop. It has to stop for the future of this state. It has to stop for the wherewithal of our children wanting to stay here and be productive citizens. I am a small business owner, and there's a lot of issues that revolve around that. But I think the real way to, putting the restrictions on spending, because really the purpose of government is to spend as much as you can or you don't get it next year. The way you address that is by having a governor that presents that blue book budget that sets the tone for the state of Ohio and the direction for the state of Ohio on how we're going to take care of all the social concerns and the responsibilities of state government, but do it in a way where we can lower our taxes, lower our tax base, level our tax base, and promote prosperity.
Well, the love fest has ended. We have some disagreement. Now, I'd like to depart from the format just for a moment, since Mr. Flannery does disagree with Mr. Blackwell. Mr. Blackwell, I'd like to give you 1 minute to rebut what he just said. And at the risk of giving him the last word, I'll give him one more minute as well, because this is such an important issue to Ohioans.
Well, 26 other states have some form of constitutional restraints within their constitution. This is not a breakthrough idea in the nation, but it is a breakthrough idea in the state of Ohio. It doesn't put government on autopilot. You still have to make decisions, setting priorities, making spending decisions within the context of the cap. The reality is that you can't change the tax code to jumpstart our economy unless you build the fiscal space by controlling spending to make those reforms. And I think that this is a simple way to do it. Patrick Henry said, constitutions are not instruments of the government to restrain the people. Constitutions are instruments of the people to restrain the government. And there is nothing more in need in this state than restrain on state government spending.
Mr. Flannery, 1 minute.
Yeah, and you can keep within that principle by just simply having an amendment that requires voter approval for tax increases and leaving it at that. Again, it's, I think, a fundamental difference between myself and Mr. Blackwell in that I view leadership differently. I don't care what 26 other states in this country do. I care what happens here in Ohio. I care what happens to my family. And Ohio needs to be a leader, not a follower. And what I'm going to do is make Ohio the best state in the union when it regards to education, the best state in the union in regards to job promotion, and the best state of the union for a place where people want to come here and call home.
And in the next disagreement, please remind me to give Mr. Blackwell the last word. Mr. Grindel, please.
First of all, Ken Blackwell will make a great great thermometer for the state of Ohio, and I look forward to living in Ohio where he sets the temperature. Number two, why do we need voter oversight of tax increases in the state? Well, the answer is simple. Based on my 5 years in the legislature, it's obvious that the governor and the legislature can't put a lid on their own spending habits. Ohio has a spending problem. In the last 15 years, the state of Ohio has increased its budget by 100%, and we're now spending over $50 billion, and that's with a B, and for a kid who grew up in South Euclid, Ohio, a billion's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. And the question you have to ask yourself is, while we're spending at twice the rate we were less than two decades ago, is our state better off than it was two decades ago? And as the Secretary of State Blackwell has pointed out, the answer is no. We have slipped from being a leader economically to a follower. We have slipped from being a leader in keeping in the people's pockets their money so that they could spend it for their families, to taking the money from their pockets and letting folks in Columbus spend it. That is counterproductive to the long-term health of Ohio, and we must turn this around. Now, I actually, with Representative Gilb, introduced a flat tax in Ohio, and unfortunately it went nowhere, but we're hoping with Governor Blackwell we can get back to a flat tax in Ohio, like some of the states around us. I voted against the measure that Mr. Flannery talked about that was going to increase now property taxes on schools at a rate of 4% every year, because that's the wrong direction. But the sad truth is, government in Ohio has a spending addiction that it cannot control, and we're going to have to turn this back to the people to bring it under control. And we need to do that for our children's generation and our grandchildren's generation, so that Ohio can regain its economic greatness that it once had before we became a tax and spend state.
Mr. Smith, I realize that all of us present here love to pay our federal taxes, so there's no controversy on the federal level. But would you please confine your remarks to federal spending, taxation, and your personal feelings about that?
Certainly. There was a recent study done that indicated that the cost of doing business in America was roughly 23% higher than the cost of doing business in nine other peer countries. And they based the bulk of that cost of doing business on the tax burden that corporations and entrepreneurs carry here in America. And Mr. John Kerry made the comment about these corporations that were going overseas. He called them unpatriotic. In essence, he was saying, you should stay here in America and uphold all the regulatory and tax burdens that we are placing upon you and somehow turn a profit and stay in business for the American people. And to me, that was appalling. What Mr. Kerry should have done is said, you know what, we as leaders in our country are being unpatriotic to our citizens. It is Ohioans and Americans that will make Ohio and America great. That can only happen if government steps out of the way. This idea that returning money to corporations and the rich only benefits them is not correct. I remember reading a few years ago an article by a painter in New Jersey, and he said, painted houses, and he said simply, you know, I love when the rich get a tax break and when corporations get a tax break, because you know what? They paint their houses often. And the business people, they paint their businesses more often. The money goes back into the economy. The rich and corporations never sit on their cash. So this idea that returning money back to the people whose money it is to begin with is false. It's wrong. They're going to invest it. Corporations invest it back in their business. They hire new people. Local entrepreneurs, if they have a higher profit, they're going to expand their business. They're going to grow. They're going to hire people in the neighborhood. And you as an individual, when you get more money coming in, more than likely you do something with it. Even if it's buying federal treasury bonds, well, let's not go there. But even if it's investing it in banks and other institutions, stocks, it goes back into the economy. It helps our economy. So I believe more than anything, the way to strengthen the economy in America is get more money out of government's hands and put more money back into the hands of Americans. Sit back and watch what we can do with it.
I asked my listeners on my radio program this afternoon to pretend that they could be here tonight and sit across the table from each one of you and ask you questions. And I had them call and tell me the questions they would like to ask. One of the ones that came up most frequently and most passionately was the topic of candidates running on a conservative, liberal, whatever platform in the primary or before the general election, promising a particular group, particularly value voters who are represented primarily here tonight, politicians who promise to Christians, value voters on certain issues, and then the minute they're elected, seem to betray the very people who worked so hard to get them elected. I think Christian conservatives, value voters are extremely concerned about that. And I'd like to ask you your position on that personally, and politicians in general who do not keep campaign promises, particularly on issues of value. Mr. Brock Blackwell, we'll begin with you.
There's a tremendous frustration among the body politic in general, but among Republicans specifically. I find that Republicans are sick and tired of leaders, Republican leaders, who campaign like Ronald Reagan and then govern like Dick Celeste. And what they're looking for is a fidelity to principle. And what I mean by that is that Republicans made a lot of hay out of Dick Celeste's jacking up our tax rate at the highest rate ever. And in the last 3 years, a Republican-led government headed by Governor Taft has given the taxpayers of this state the two largest tax increases in the state's history. People don't like that, and they're frustrated with it. And here's my commitment. I get up every day. I commit myself to working hard to be who I say I am and to do what I say I'm going to do. And I think I have a public record of that sort of conservative consistency. And what I have enjoyed about this campaign is that I've been able to contrast my advocacy of conservatism with the pattern of convenient conversions of my opponent. So I think fidelity to principle is something that people look for in leaders, and I think I'll be able to give them that and that will make me a Republican for change.
Mr. Grindel.
Thank you. First of all, I wish my opponent was here to answer that question and explain how she could be campaigning this year as sharing our values and being a conservative leader when she supports abortion and when she was in the Senate voted to raise taxes on multiple occasions, because I'd like to hear the answer to that question as well. I appreciate the question because I think we have a problem in Ohio. We have an erosion of public confidence, not just in our current statewide leaders, but in the process by which we're picking our statewide leaders. I think folks out there are tired of being lied to during campaign season. They're getting tired of hearing from every politician, I'm going to spend less, and I'm going to vote against taxes, and I'm pro this. And then as soon as they get in office, regardless of which party they've been in recent times, they do the opposite. I have sat in the Republican caucus in the House for 4 years, and in the Senate for the last year and a half, and on more than one occasion, I had to get up and go out and ask the sergeant of arms which caucus was I sitting in, because people were saying things in opposite of what they campaigned on and claimed to believe. I asked the voters to check my record. I am a Republican who doesn't just talk the talk, I walk the walk. I voted against the 1 cent sales tax. I led that revolt.
Does not have the principles that I do. And as we travel throughout the state, Ohioans are ready for change. They are tired of the rhetoric. They are tired of the broken promises. They looked at his record, and no matter how much money he spends on them, it cannot cover up his record. Now, I do not have a record to represent and tell you who I am, but I hope that tonight, as you hear me speak and answer these questions, and as you are in my presence and you feel my sincerity and the message and my words, that you can see that I am a true conservative. I will not yield. I am going there to represent you. And when my time is up, it will be time for me to move on and someone else to take my place. For I am here to serve and serve the people. And I believe that is the attribute that we need to look for more than anything in our leaders, a genuine desire to serve the people. I was on a radio interview a couple of nights ago, and a woman called in and she said, "What's happened with the grassroots? How is it that the politicians have lost connection with the people? That seems to be gone. They're more connected with the lobbyists and the corporations in America than they are with the voters." And she then issued a challenge to all the listeners and said, "Let's stand up, Ohioans. Let's make our voice be heard above the money and above the lobbyists. And when we get behind Mr. Smith, and we get him there, he will not forget who put him there, and he will be loyal to us as we are to him, and together we will make a better Ohio and a better America."
I just want to say I am truly, deeply saddened that the other candidates did not avail themselves of the opportunity tonight to answer specifically questions like that. And I wish they were here. To the gubernatorial candidates specifically, recently a number of states have introduced, and some like South Dakota have passed legislation banning all abortions. Legislation is pending here in Ohio that would do the same thing. Would you support similar legislation here in the state of Ohio that would basically ban all abortions? Mr. Flannery, first, please.
All I can say is yes, I would definitely give favorable consideration to legislation that would curb, ban abortions. I do have exceptions to the life of the mother, cases of incest and rape. But I am proud to say that I have been endorsed by Ohio Right to Life, and that's unusual for a Democrat running for governor to make that claim. It's just in my fundamental belief, I think life always is the option, and I'm happy to see that the Democratic Party is starting to change its views. They've started a Democrats for Life organization that focuses on the education aspect of educating people to so that when they make that choice naturally would fall to life. So.
Mr. Blackwell.
the most frequent question asked relative to life in this campaign season has been, if you're governor and South Dakota-like legislation comes before you, would you sign it? And I said I would delightfully sign it because I have been always in my public life pro-life. And that means that my public policy positions have defended life because I believe that life isn't granted by government, but it is a gift of God, and it is the first obligation of government to protect innocent life, all innocent life.
A follow-up to that, Mr. Blackwell, much of the Ohio media just recently made an accusation that your position had changed, although slightly, that your position had changed on this issue. Would you like to address that?
Well, I think what they were saying is that over the last 6 or 7 years, I have evolved to a position of no exceptions because I understand the marvels of medical science. And medical science has taken away, medical science has taken away the uncomfortable option of having to decide between the life of the mother or the life of the baby. Medical science has evolved to such an extent that they can both try to save.
Due to FCC regulations, the word AM880 WRFD Columbus Worthington must now conclude its broadcast day. The word 880 WRFD is owned and operated by Salem Media of Ohio Incorporated.